Hi, this is Kim, and welcome back to Weber County's Greatest Generation. So for those of you who aren't from Utah, you need to know that July 24th is a holiday. On July 24th, 1847, Brigham Young got to the Wasatch Mountains and said, "This is the place." Since then, July 24th is celebrated with parades, rodeos, and fireworks, and Ogden is no exception. And the celebration starts a week before the actual July 24th holiday, so there's always a lot of things going on. But 80 years ago, in 1943, during the rodeo on July 23rd, there was a mass murder in Ogden when Austin Cox killed five people, including the judge that handled his divorce and ordered him to pay alimony. I did a podcast earlier on this story when I told the story of Private Dale Nelson, who was killed in action in Germany on December 18th, 1944, about 14 months from now. One of the victims in the shooting is his father, Sam. And in another ironic twist, another victim, Bessie Brooks, had a brother, Lieutenant Robert Blakely, who had recently been declared as missing in action in Africa. His status will later be changed to killed in action. So here is the whole story. On July 24th, 1943, the evening edition of the Ogden Standard Examiner had the headline, "Midnight Gunman Slays Five in Ogden." Judge Truman among the victims, killer is seized. So just to let you know, Truman is spelled T-R-U-E. M-A-N, and not like Harry Truman. Gun victims include Sam Nelson, 50, Mrs. T. Burton of Rigby, Idaho, Bessie Brooks, 30, and Jane Stauffer, 29. Second District Judge Lewis V. Truman, 52, was shot and killed together with four other persons, and two others are in the D hospital today, with wounds received when Austin Cox, 38, of 133 Willow, which I looked it up and it's actually Wilson Lane, ran amok Friday night with a 12-gauge shotgun. M. Nelson, 38-56 Harrison, Bessie Brooks, 22-38 Lincoln, about 30, Jane Stauffer, 29, and Mrs. T. Burton of Rigby, Idaho, all of 22-40 Lincoln. The injured are T-Bert Stauffer, 35, and Dale Brooks, 29, of 2238 Lincoln. Stauffer is in critical condition with severe head and shoulder wounds, and Brooks has a hand wound. So this all happened around 22nd and Lincoln, which, ironically, is where the Ogden Police Station is located today. I'm always amazed at how fast news traveled back then. On July 25th, the Salt Lake Tribune had almost a full-page article with a map and pictures of all of the victims. So just a warning, this article is pretty graphic. I was kind of shocked at how graphic it is. So this is how the Tribune told the story. So shortly before 11 p.m. Friday, Mr. and Mrs. Stauffer and Mrs. Burton arrived at their modest home located in the rear lot after a day of picking apricots. The family had scarcely entered the house when Cox, stalking through the yard, knocked on the back door. Neighbors indistinctly heard Mrs. Stauffer, who answered the door, deny that such a party lived there. Cox immediately fired point blank at Mrs. Stauffer. She fell on the porch. Her mother, Mrs. Burton, and her husband came running from inside the house at the sound of the shooting. As they appeared, Cox shot them both down. Mrs. Burton, her head partly blown off by the buckshot, fell to the floor within inches of where Beverly Jane, their four-year-old daughter, had crawled underneath a washing machine when she heard the shots and screams. The hysterical child, blood spattered and staring at her murdered grandmother, remained under the washing machine for almost 45 minutes. Later, police Lieutenant E.L. Shaw, investigating the killings, heard the youngster sobbing. He could find no sign of the child and thought he had heard a neighbor's infant. It was almost 15 minutes later when he again entered the back porch. Tiny Beverly Jane was crying loudly. He quickly found her underneath the washing machine. Out of her senses with fright, the youngster screamed and held out her arms to the officer, who moved her over her grandmother's body to get to the girl. Later, she was taken to the home of relatives, Mr. and Mrs. J. Burt Dana of 1619 Kiesel. After the Stauffer killings, Mr. Brooks, a neighbor, said he walked out on his back porch to investigate the shots. "I just walked out on the porch," he told officers, "and this bird let me have it." The shot struck him in the arm and hand. Attending physician said Mr. Brooks may lose his hand. As he stumbled to the ground, his wife, apparently witnessing the entire episode, shrieked and raced for the front of the house, intent on calling for help. But Cox, too, ran around the house, and as she stepped onto her front porch, she was struck squarely by a blast of buckshot. Mr. Samuel Nelson's survivor said Mr. Nelson, his wife, his mother, and sister were visiting at the home of his brother Theodore at 331 22nd, adjacent to the Stauffer property. Hearing a series of blasts from the killer's shotgun, Mr. Nelson commented, "It sounds as if someone is celebrating. Let's go out." He stepped out the rear door, seeing the killer and still believing it was a holiday celebration. He greeted the gunman, "Why don't you do some of your celebrating over here?" The killer turned to Mr. Nelson and said, "Maybe you'd like some of it." "Yes," Mr. Nelson responded. With that, the gunman turned the shotgun on Mr. Nelson at close range. He fell, and the slayer ran through an alleyway to his awaiting automobile to speed away. From the grisly scene at Lincoln Avenue, Sheriff John Watson said Cox drove to the Truman residence. The crazed gunman parked in front of the darkened house, approximately 2 miles from the Lincoln address. Judge and Mrs. Truman were both in bed. Walking to the east side of the house, Cox placed his gun close to the kitchen window and fired once. The reverberating crash awakened the Trumans. Judge Truman climbed from his bed on the second floor of his home, ran downstairs, saw the damage caused by the shot, and immediately telephoned the sheriff's office. So just a note, I'm not sure why he telephoned the sheriff's office, since technically he should have called the Ogden police. Going back upstairs, he started to dress. He heard a noise on his front lawn, his wife told the officers, and he walked toward a front window with Mrs. Truman following him. Glancing down on the dark lawn, he saw the shadowy figure of Cox. "What in the world are you doing here?" he shouted. "Get off the lawn." The echo of a shotgun blast aimed at his face drowned out his next words. The judge slumped over, 3 buckshot in his forehead. Neighbors, including Dr. Frank K. Bartlett, heard the shots and screams. They ran over to help, and Dr. Bartlett saw Cox climb into his decrepit, light-colored automobile and drive off to the police station. While police, sheriff's officers, state patrolmen, and even military police spread throughout the city as a general alarm was broadcast for the killer, Cox unobtrusively drove up behind this police station. So just another note, the police station was in the back of the city county building between 25th and 26th of Washington Boulevard. He entered the building through a door used to admit prisoners to the jail and opening into the desk sergeant quarters. Across the hall was a smaller, short hall leading to an office. Sitting in the office was W. Wilson Cliff, Salt Lake Tribune reporter. So now we know how they got the big scoop. In plain view of the tall gunman, he was talking to M.L. Critchlow and Ross Olson, the Ogden City Auditor, Clarence Stabb, the city and county building engineer, F.D. Thompson, the police radio technician, and police chauffeur, which I'm not sure what that is, Fred M. Gill, were standing in the office or the adjacent hall. Suddenly, Gill blurted out, "Duck, everybody. There's that crazy bird with the shotgun." It seems like "bird" was the slang of the day. Cox, throwing a shell into the gun, was aiming his weapon at State Patrolman Merlin Brown and Kim Ward, who were standing in the outer hallway. Nearby were Lieutenant Smith and Sergeant Schneider. It was then the two soldiers exploded into action, ending the bloody trail of the crime that Cox had left in Ogden. As police began weaving together the gruesome crime wave, officers said that among those whom Cox was apparently seeking to quote-unquote get was Deputy Sheriff George E. Weatherston and one or two other officers. Deputy Weatherston had arrested Cox previously when the gunman was beating his wife. At that time, Cox told the deputy that he would quote-unquote get you for this. When Judge Truman granted Mrs. Cox a divorce, he ordered Mr. Cox to pay her alimony, partly to defray the expenses of their then-unborn child. Sheriff Watson said that Cox considered this an unjust assessment, although Mrs. Cox said her former husband had been paying promptly. The divorce was granted in February and the child was born in May. Cox was also apparently gunning for Justice of the Peace Alfred Gladwell of Birch Creek, who found him guilty of the assault upon his wife. Formerly a guard at Clearfield Naval Supply Depot, Cox had been discharged following the trouble with his wife. So also on that day in the Salt Lake Tribune was a big map showing where the crime took place in Ogden and pictures and obituaries of the victims. Judge Lewis Vernon Truman was born October 10, 1891 in Roanoke, Virginia, a son of James Washington and Almeda Coleman Truman. On July 21, 1918, he married Ora B. Johnson of Roanoke, Virginia. Judge Truman served in the Florida House of Representatives in 1925, 26, 27, and in 1929. He served on the staff of the governor of Florida as a lieutenant colonel. In 1938, he was appointed a judge of the 2nd District Court, so remember 2nd District, to fill a vacancy created by the appointment of Judge Eugene E. Pratt to the state Supreme Court bench. He was elected to the same position in 1940. Prior to this appointment, Judge Truman was deputy Weber County attorney. Cases disposed of in his court, which drew special attention as a district judge, were a controversial Ogden Pioneer Days suit of 1939, in which Ogden Pioneer Days, Inc. was dissolved and directors were ordered to refund more than $17,000, or $257,000 in today's money, to the city of Ogden, and of the trial of Walter Robert Avery, who was convicted and executed for the slaying of Police Detective Hoyt L. Gates on February 11, 1941. Surviving are his widow of Ogden, his father of Roanoke, Virginia, two half-sisters, Mrs. Lloyd C. Boss and Bertha Truman, both of Roanoke, Virginia. Funeral services have been tentatively set for Monday with the time and place to be announced. Additional services and burial will be in Roanoke. Samuel Lewis Nelson, 3856 Harrison Boulevard, was born November 29, 1893 in New England, Pennsylvania, a son of Victor and Eliza Braddock Nelson. He worked in the Pennsylvania coal fields when a young man and moved with his family to Salt Lake City in 1914. He entered the U.S. Army in 1917 and went overseas where he participated in a number of major battles in World War I. After receiving his discharge on March 1, 1919, he returned to Utah, coming to Ogden, where he has since resided, being engaged in farming and working on the railroad. He married Julia Buse in the Salt Lake LDS Temple on June 28, 1922. He was an elder in the Ogden LDS 14th Ward and a member of the Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States. Surviving are his widow of Ogden, two sons, Private Dale B. Nelson of Fort Knox, Kentucky, and Ray B. Nelson of Ogden, two daughters, Ruth and Lugene Nelson of Ogden, his mother, Mrs. Elizabeth B. Peck of Ogden, three brothers and two sisters. Funeral arrangements are awaiting word from the son in the military service. The body is at the Altarist Mortuary. Bessie Allison Blakely Brooks, 29, wife of Dale Brooks of 2238 Lincoln Avenue, was born October 15, 1913 in Ogden, a daughter of Matthew and Arta Simpson Blakely. She was married to Mr. Brooks on July 6, 1935. She was a member of the Ogden 3rd LDS Ward and a teacher in the Ward Sunday School. Surviving are her husband, one son, Kent Blakely Brooks, her parents of Ogden, one brother, Lieutenant Robert S. Blakely, who was recently reported as missing in action in North Africa, and a grandmother, Mrs. Margaret Blakely of Ogden. Funeral services will be made by Larkin and Sons of Ogden. Mrs. Eliza Weeks Burton, the wife of William Burton of Swan Valley, Idaho, had arrived in Ogden in the spring of 1943 to help tend her granddaughter, Beverly, while her daughter Jane worked in the Ogden war industry. Mrs. Burton was born in Smithfield but had resided in Swan Valley for the past 50 years. She was a member of the LDS Church. Survivors include her husband, 6 sons and daughters, Charles and David Burton of Swan Valley, William with the U.S. Army in Australia, Mrs. Belva Allen, and Mrs. Hannah Nebaker of Shoshone. She is also survived by 6 brothers and sisters. Jane B. Stauffer was born in Swan Valley. She attended primary schools there and graduated from Idaho Falls High School. Her husband worked for several years for her father in Swan Valley. The family came to Ogden 2 years ago. Funeral arrangements for those two will be announced soon. In the September 8, 1943, Salt Lake Tribune, another article reads, Cox gets death penalty for Ogden slaying. Austin Cox, 38, convicted of the murder of former District Judge Lewis Truman, Wednesday afternoon stood before Judge Glenn W. Adams of the 2nd District, so this is the same district court that Judge Truman worked in, to hear the sentence of death pronounced and the date of execution set as October 15th. So remember, this is less than 3 months after the murder, so justice was certainly swift in 1943. Asked by the court if he had a choice between the statutory provision of hanging and shooting, Cox, in a voice so inaudible that Simon Barlow, the court reporter, failed to hear it, "I'll take the firing squad." Austin Cox, you have been convicted by a jury, duly impaneled to try your case of the crime of murder in the first degree, without a recommendation of leniency. The court adjudges you to be guilty of crime murder in the first degree. So another interesting thing about this is he was only tried for the murder of Judge Truman. He was not tried for the 4 other murders. It is the judgment of this court and the sentence of the law that you, Austin Cox, for your said offense, be conveyed forthwith into the custody of the warden of the Utah State Prison. There, within the exterior walls of the said prison, will be shot until dead on October 15, 1943. R.R. Hackett, attorney for Cox, began to argue for a delay in imposition of the sentence for at least 30 days because of the motion for a new trial he had filed earlier in the day, declaring the filing of the motion delays all proceedings. Remember, this is September 3rd, and they just set the execution date for October 15th. However, the court ruled that setting the date for October 15th will give the defense the required 30 days to file its affidavits in support of a new trial and be heard, and also to file an appeal to the state Supreme Court. The defense did file an appeal with the Utah State Supreme Court, and on April 18, 1944, they had reached a ruling. Their basis for an appeal was that the defendant was insane and unable to proceed to trial. Thereupon, the court appointed 2 alienists, not sure what that is, to examine the defendant as to his sanity, and on their opinion found that the defendant was sane. The defendant now claims that the finding was contrary to evidence. The court determined, quote, without the evidence taken on that hearing, the court cannot determine whether the finding of the court was supported, but by the evidence submitted at the trial, there is certainly sufficient evidence to support a finding that the defendant is sane. The defense also raised as an error the testimony of his former wife, and they dismissed that because they did not object at the time that she testified. They also raised the issue of whether or not the court had the jurisdiction to try the case. And finally, the defense argued that it was an error that the court refused to give proposed instruction number 3 on insanity. All claims were dismissed and the judgment of the court was affirmed. So that takes us to February 9th of 1944 when we go to the Deseret News and the headline reads, Utah Killers Escape Nipped. Guards catch Austin Cox in plan to dig his way out. Quote, a long-planned daring escape attempt from the Utah State Prison by Austin Cox of Ogden, murderer of 5 persons, was thwarted by 2 guards and a prison official last Thursday. It was brought to light today. Cox, who had been living in a special dormitory assigned to him along with long-term prisoners, was consigned to the quote-unquote hole Thursday because of being constantly quarrelsome with the guards. Cox himself was awaiting a hearing from the state Supreme Court concerning the death penalty, which had been meted upon his conviction for the brutal killings last July. So the Deseret News stated, apparently under the impression that only one guard would escort him to the prison dungeon. Yes, they actually used the word dungeon. Cox took along with him some fancy work, consisting of two long sections of rope woven from his blankets, two of his bed braces, and a handmade weapon of two sharp razor blades wired onto a wooden handle. Instead of one guard, however, he was sent with an escort and a deputy. When he was searched, the escape paraphernalia and the vicious weapon were found. Upon being questioned, Cox said that he expected to dig out of the dungeon and make his escape using force and the razor weapon if necessary. So all of his appeals were dismissed, and on June 19, 1944, about 11 months after the murders, he became the 36th man executed in Utah. And in another irony, the last person to be executed in Utah was Walter Robert Avery, who Judge Lewis Truman had sentenced to the death penalty and was carried out on February 5th, 1943. So the execution in 1943, Judge Truman had ordered, and the execution of Austin Cox in 1944 was for the murder of Judge Truman. I find that really ironic. In the Standard Examiner of July 23rd, 1947, there is an in memoriam to the loving memory of my husband, Judge Lewis V. Truman, who passed away to life eternal on July 23, 1943. That was by his wife. There were similar notices in the 1948, which was the fifth anniversary, the 1950, and the 1953, the 10th anniversary, also in the paper. In 1965, her obituary appeared in the Standard, announcing her funeral in Pensacola, Florida. She died in Sacred Heart Hospital after an extended illness at the age of 71. It also says she moved to Pensacola 16 years ago, which would have been 1949, but had been a frequent visitor to Ogden, and she was survived by seven nieces and nephews. As I said, Private Dale Nelson, the son of Sam Nelson, will be killed in action on December 18, 1944 in Germany, which means that the Nelson family lost their father and their brother within about a year and a half. The status of Lieutenant Robert Blakely, Bonnie Brooks' brother, missing in North Africa since April 18, 1943, would be changed to killed in action. I didn't find any more information on T. Burton and his daughter Beverly, and it looks like that they moved away from Utah shortly after the murders. So one of the worst tragedies of this, if a tragedy can be worse than another, is that Wanda Cox had no relationship to anybody on the Lincoln Avenue address. We don't know where he got that information, but he went there and killed four innocent people. So when I was doing research on this, this is quite a famous case, and there are a lot of crime podcasts about this. There is even a police comic book about this murder, these murders that was in 1951, and it's a comic book called A Night of Horror, and it is still out there if you want to Google it. So there you have it. 80 years ago, on July 23rd, 1943, these five murders took place in Ogden. One of the things I forgot to mention was when the people at the rodeo grounds heard about this, they all rushed down to the Lincoln address to see what was going on. And then when they heard there'd been another murder, they all rushed up to 27th Street. So in the middle of all of this, all of these people leaving the rodeo grounds, all of this traffic, you had people running between both addresses trying to find out what happened. I don't think things have changed that much. Although we do have social media now, it would have been all over social media. So thank you for joining. This is really just an untold tragedy of domestic violence, really, and how it impacted Ogden and five families. You can find the podcast available on my website, WeberCountysGreatestGeneration.com, or on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for joining.